And now, with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved, here is Dr. James Hauck.
Right. Good evening, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time, and welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. Very excited to be with you here tonight and every other Wednesday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, as well as other times in between. I am Dr. James Hauck, and if you would like more information about me or to leave me your comments about tonight's show, please visit the website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. That's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. Well, as you've been following me for some time, listening to this show, I certainly appreciate it, but you know that each and every week, these broadcasts focus on the integration, and that's a key word here, the integration of spirituality, our spirituality, and our mental health, all within the context of our relationship that we have with ourselves and others and God or the divine. And these broadcasts are podcasted now, in case you want to go back and listen again, or you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows. Just go on the website and just click on Reclaiming Authenticity, and then just find the banner where it says Archives and click on that and find the show that you would like to listen to again. And I certainly appreciate it. And you know, the reason why I place this mental and spiritual integration in relationships is because, well, after all, we are social beings. And when you do think about it in those terms, that because we are social beings, we often receive our deepest physical, emotional, psychological, even spiritual wounds in these relationships. And yet the irony is that we can discover our greatest healing and our strength and our peace and forgiveness and love through healthier relationships. Okay? And we don't have to look too far. Just because we come into a family and, you know, that is our initial understanding of the world in which we are now being raised. And so these relationships, where these, you know, wounds come from, as well as how they can heal, just might be within our very own families. They just could occur between coworkers. They could occur between friends. You know, because you think about it, that when we transform, that we are also transforming others by our presence, our grace, and our understanding, that we are so connected with one another that this is inevitable because of how we begin to relate to others differently. But first, our forgiveness, kindness, and compassion always begins with how we treat ourselves. Because whenever we're compassionate with ourselves, we then can be more compassionate with others. And when we are more forgiving with ourselves, we then can be more forgiving with others. And when we are able to live in gratitude with ourselves, we then discover how this opens our hearts to see and live in gratitude with others. So all in all, first and foremost, transformation begins with us. Okay. It's kind of interesting that I had a conversation with an individual earlier today, and we got on the subject of saying the four things that matter the most. And it aligns exactly with, you know, just my core beliefs of healing relationships and why forgiveness is so important and gratitude is so important and love is so important. Because when you get right down to it, and the context that we were talking in was about how do you say goodbye to a loved one who is transitioning out, or who is dying, who's on hospice and so forth. A lot of people struggle with this. A lot of people just, you know, just don't know what to say. You know, they know that they should say something. They don't know if they're ever going to see the person again or what. They just lack the words. And just so simply remembering that, you know, there's four things that we should be saying to our loved ones upon their transition is basically, forgive me, I forgive you, thank you, and I love you. That's it. Forgive me, I forgive you, thank you, and I love you. Now, these four things are not just to be in the context of a person who's on hospice or saying goodbye to a loved one who is actively dying. We should be saying these things to one another, you know, the living, you know what I mean? And, you know, because again, it's in the restoration of these relationships that we just don't want them to continue on just shattered as they were, and just kind of hope that things get better. But just remember, forgive me, I forgive you, thank you, and I love you. Very simple. We will never forget it. Guaranteed. You put that into practice, and you will serve yourself and others wonderful. Well, Carl Rogers was he was a psychiatrist, and actually he was the founder of person-centered therapy. He once said, similarly, you know, along these lines, that when another person is hurting, or when another person is confused or troubled or anxious or alienated, even terrified, or even if she is doubtful or he is doubtful of self-worth or uncertain as to their identity, then another person's understanding is called for. And it is this gentle and sensitive companionship of an empathetic stance, as he calls it, that provides an illumination, an understanding, and a healing. And in such situations, deep understanding is, as he believes, the most precious gift one can give to another. Well, again, for those of you new to this program, I just like to say that I am a firm believer that all of us come into this world already equipped and graced with everything we need for in this life in terms of how do we live out this life in relationships. We have gifts. We have skills. We have talents. We have strengths. We have character traits and so on and so forth. And yet, being in relationship with one another, there's a tendency to be wounded, you know, emotionally, psychologically, physically, even spiritually. And we may feel that we need to hide that which we've brought into this world. Or maybe we hide or push away our skills or our talents way, way, way down so that others people cannot see it and therefore exploit it. Or maybe we've never had a chance to fully explore and discover what is our true giftedness. What are our skills? What are the things that we're not just good at, but our strengths, our character traits, and so forth? And maybe we bought into the message that we would never amount to anything by whoever said that to us. But at any rate, whenever we do not realize the giftedness that we have, what we brought into this world, we often go through life functioning from a place of woundedness or victimization, instead of a place of healing and wholeness and really fully embracing our hachaitas, our uniqueness, our thisness. Well, if you'd like to call in and be part of tonight's show, I invite you to call the toll-free line. It's 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And give me your insights and comments and thoughts on tonight's subject. The wisdom found in simplicity. What a silly old bear can teach us. Simplicity. Okay. I know, I think everybody talks about wanting to have a more simplistic life, whether that involves getting rid of the clutter that we've accumulated over the years, or we want to take more vacations, or simply not getting caught up in the day-to-day frenzy and fear of world and local events, local news. And, you know, ironically, advertisers and marketers want to sell us things to make our lives simpler. You know, that we can't live without this or that. It'll make your lives so much easier. The only problem is with those things that we often run out of room in our garages for all the things that are supposed to make our lives simpler. So, in a sense, simplicity means, you know, that we can live our very best and simply knowing who we are. You know, we know our strengths, we know our limitations, and so forth. And yet, how many of us struggle with knowing who we truly are? I mean, most of the time, we answer this kind of question with what we do for a living, such as, well, I've been working at such and such a place for 10 years now, and on the weekends, I like to do this and such and so on, and, you know, in my spare time, you know. And quite frankly, in answering the question, who are you, really appears to go only so far as to what's on our driver's license. And yet there is so much more to us that we have yet to understand. Because when we truly know ourselves, it becomes very empowering. Not to the point where we want to hold that information over another person's head in some sort of intimidation or wield it like a blunt instrument. No. But rather, knowing who we truly are unlocks an inner freedom and a bliss, a joy that causes us to begin reprioritizing our lives in a way that seeks to empower ourselves and to empower others. Yeah, I once read a story one time about people who've had near-death experiences, you know, and how they often spend, on average, about 14 plus, give or take a year or 2 years, coming to terms with who they are and the struggles they face when they try to integrate their experiences with their daily lives. Now, I don't exactly have the time, you know, to explore all the integration issues, but I will say that in 2 weeks, I'm going to be sharing how near-death experiencers integrate their experiences, which pulls them into a greater depth of authenticity. But for now, I will share that, you know, near-death experiencers typically become people who are more loving, more forgiving, more compassionate. They might even walk away from six-figure salaries and careers that oppress people and choose to enter career fields whereby now they can help heal and empower others because they're no longer enthralled by the glamour and glitz of this life because they've had experienced a far greater beauty and splendor that far surpasses anything that this life might try to match. Because now they see others as they truly are, souls by which we are interconnected to, by our thoughts, our words, and our actions. Now, you don't necessarily have to have had a near-death experience in order to experience the radical transformation that touches you as a soul. But like I said, in 2 weeks, I'll have more to say about this. So again, I will remind you after the break about a little bit more of the details of this particular topic. So how do we live out this simplistic life, you know, the simplicity that we want in our lives? And what in the world does this have to do with Winnie the Pooh? Good question. So let's return to the 100-acre woods and learn from this very simplistic bear, shall we? Now, any fans out there in internet radio land ever read the books in the Winnie the Pooh series? If you haven't, you're missing out, because I highly recommend them. They're classic. And these stories are not just for kids, you know, just like Dr. Seuss books. You know, adults can certainly find timeless wisdom in between the pages. And ironically, I'm sure many of us can identify with one of the characters in the Winnie the Pooh book series. You know, maybe you identify yourself as Pooh Bear. or maybe rabbit or tigger. Maybe you identify with piglet or with Kanga and Roo, or maybe you see yourself more of a Christopher Robin or an Eeyore or an owl. Well, Benjamin Hoff, who was an American writer who wrote the Tao of Pooh, as well as the Te of Piglet, frequently refers to Lao Tzu as the author of the oldest book on Taoism. Now, the philosophy of Taoism is believed to have originated with Lao Tzu from China, somewhere between 604-517 BC. Don't hold me to it because, you know, going back that far, going to be off a few years, okay? But anyway, the story goes that Lao Tzu was saddened by his people's unwillingness to explore and develop the natural goodness that he encouraged. Because, in a sense, Taoism is an ancient Chinese philosophy that focuses on the natural order of the universe as a guide for living, known as the Way. And Lao Tzu often expressed a basic principle that there should be no preconceived notions about how life should be, and therefore no manipulation of the world to force it into what we think should happen, what we want it to be for us. So think about it this way. In the everyday world, people often rationalize and, you know, just use their cleverness to explain or justify their behavior, rather than paying attention to the ebb and flow of the power that lives within everything and everyone. And as a result, that we can certainly, in knowing this, find contentment and joy in living simply. So, in other words, we approach life from a particular way of appreciating, learning from, and working with whatever happens in everyday life. We don't judge it. It's just, it is what it is. And from the Taoist point of view, the natural result of this harmonious way of living is happiness. Now, according to Lao Tzu, as he takes this philosophy a little bit deeper, the more humanity interfered with the natural balance produced and governed by God's universal laws, the further away this harmony retreated into a distance. So in other words, the more we try to force things in our lives, the more frustration and suffering and discontent we bring upon ourselves. It's kind of like messing with our circadian rhythms. You know, it's just the way things are. You know, when we get tired, we need to sleep. When we get hungry, we need to eat, and so forth. And there's a rhythm of that, just like there are daily rhythms, there's weekly rhythms, there's monthly rhythms, and there are seasonal rhythms. Okay? So, this all brings us now to Winnie the Pooh, because in the Tao of Pooh, this Taoist principle of Pooh, which is actually pronounced Pooh, is translated into the image of the uncarved block, okay, or the Wu Wei, meaning that things in their original state, and then that carry their own natural power. And when you manipulate that thing, or let's say you carve this block, you ruin its power. But it is in its simplistic original state. The uncarved block is very pure, very pristine, and it has power in and of itself. So, for example, let's use this. Pooh, as in Winnie the Pooh, he's this embodiment of the uncarved block, you know, the Pooh. Because he is simple-minded, and he doesn't think too much about what life means or how to change the world to suit his desires. He simply exists in the world and takes life for what it is. So again, as I quoted Carl Rogers, again, the architect of person-centered therapy, he once said that lines up beautifully with this, is that the curious paradox is that whenever I accept myself just as I am, then I can change. People are just as wonderful as sunsets if you just let them be. Because whenever I look at a sunset, I don't find myself saying, soften the orange a bit on the right-hand corner. I simply don't control a sunset. And this is similar to water flowing down a stream. You know, just water goes to the path of least resistance. Water moves over and around the obstacles without resistance. And like the characters of Winnie the Pooh, if you've ever read the chapter on them playing Pooh Sticks, you know that they would stand on a bridge and they would drop their sticks into the river and then quickly run to the other side of the bridge to see whose sticks would float by first. Well, quite frankly, whenever you live with this Wu Wei, or just in this pristine manner, you are placing a round peg into a round hole. There are no mistakes. Because again, nature doesn't make mistakes. But we want to get in there and we start messing with it and everything. And then we wonder why it's not working. Well, in another point in the Tao of Pooh, Winnie the Pooh, he sings this cute little song that's called Cobblestone Pie. And one of the lines is, a fly can't bird, but a bird can fly. And Benjamin Hoff interprets this to mean that you shouldn't try to force a square peg into a round hole, as that would ignore the reality of this is the way things are. Okay? And another long line in the song is that fish can't whistle, and neither can I. And at this point, Hoff is bringing out this concept in the Tao of Pooh as knowing one's limitations. Now, there's nothing wrong with not being able to whistle, especially if you're a fish. But there can be lots of things wrong with blindly trying to do what you aren't designed for. Okay? See, no two people are the same either. Everyone has their own inner nature. The first thing that we need to do is to recognize and trust our own inner nature, to see ourselves for who we truly are, and never to lose sight of that. There is a potential in everyone to recognize their uniqueness, their thisness, to learn to walk with the gifts that they have brought into the world, the very best parts of yourself, and so forth. And yet, still, another way to look at this Wu Wei, or the Tao of Pooh, is to use an image of a feather. Now, Pooh, or Puh, is like blowing a feather that has fallen down close to you. You just imagine we blow the feather away with a gentle puff, or Puh, and then the feather is carried away by the wind to another space and place. Well, if you've ever seen the movie Forrest Gump, you remember the key object was a white feather. You know, the movie starts off this way. Every now and then this feather comes along, shows up, and that. And it comes along at key moments in the movie, such as at the beginning and the end. And it was no accident that in the movie, Forrest Gump's favorite book was Curious George, who exemplifies a monkey who takes us through various adventures where we discover that adventures are just around the corner. So let's be open to what's coming our way and learn from that. And, you know, if you've seen the movie, you know, Forrest lived a simple life. He just kind of went with the flow of things. You know, I kind of liked the one scene where it was at the end, where, you know, Forrest is kind of narrating over, and he just says, you know, I don't know if Mama was right or if it's Lieutenant Dan. I don't know if each of us have a destiny or if we're all just floating around accidental-like on a breeze. But I think maybe it's both. Maybe both is happening at the same time. Yeah, we all seek happiness and stability. and simplicity through our thoughts and our actions. But how happy and stable and simple do any of us feel? And we know people who will successfully find wisdom and happiness will be the ones who are capable of listening to their inner natures, certainly being sensitive to the circumstances around them, and following this natural order of who they are. And if you really want to truly be wise and content, you must see the world through this inquisitive and objective mind of a child in order to find the right path to follow. You know, that childlike faith, or remaining in a state and place of teachability, always carry with you a sense of wonder, being open to learn from everyone and all things. Lao Tzu also wrote that to attain knowledge adds things every day, but to attain wisdom, remove things every day. Well, I'd really love to hear what's on your heart about these and other matters, so I invite you to call in and let's talk about the Tao of Poo. Let's talk about the wisdom of simplicity. So if you'd like to call in, again, that number is 888-627-6008, and I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. Be back with you in 1 minute. Welcome back. I am Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Earlier in the show, I mentioned how near-death experiencers, on average, take about 14 plus or minus a year or 2 years coming to terms with who they are and the struggles they face when trying to integrate their experiences within their daily lives, you know, in light of this near-death experience. Well, in 2 weeks, on Wednesday, April 26th, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, I'm going to be sharing how near-death experiencers integrate their experiences, which actually pulls them into a greater depth of reclaiming their authenticity. Well, continuing on from the first half of the show, I just want to reiterate that many of us struggle with knowing who we are. And most of the time, you know, if we're honest with ourselves, we're going to answer this kind of a question with what we do for a living, you know, such as, well, I've been working at a place for 10, 15, 20 years, or I just started a new job or something. But this is what I like to do in my off time and my hobbies and so forth. And quite frankly, in answering the question, who are you, appears to only go so far as to what's on our driver's license or a birth certificate or some other just standard run-of-the-mill information about us. It doesn't really get to the heart, or should I say the soul, of the matter. And yet there is so much more to us that we have to understand, because what we see isn't certainly all there is. And when we truly know ourselves, it becomes very empowering. And again, not to hold it over somebody's head and to try to intimidate them that I have some secret knowledge, and it's not meant to wield as, you know, some sort of like blunt instrument ready to strike somebody, but rather when we truly know who we are, it definitely unlocks an inner freedom and a peace and a bliss that causes us to begin reprioritizing our lives in a way that seeks to empower ourselves and others. Well, as many of you have been listening to this show for some time, you know that I hold a special affinity for storytelling. And one particular story was told to me the very first time I visited India. I've shared it with this audience before, so join along with me. I was visiting a Sikh spiritual leader, Baba Ram Singh, in Karnal, India, the northwest part of India. And he shared with me this story about the most important place to look for God. And he started off this story just very nonchalantly. He just, you know, we were sitting there having some tea, and he just started in with this story. He didn't say why he was sharing it with me. He just like, I'll tell you a story. Like, okay, great. I'm all for that. And he shares this story. There once lived a king who was quite rich. He was a very, very wealthy king. And this king used to pray a lot. Every day he used to pray in the morning, at mealtimes, and even at night, he used to pray. But one day, a thought came into his mind and he said, you know, I pray to God. I always think about God. But where is God? Where does God live? So he sent out a message to all the people that if anybody can tell me where God is, I will give them 100 gold coins. Well, of course, news got out that this king was going to offer 100 gold coins to anybody who could tell him where God was or where God is. Everybody wanted to try and tell him. And they would tell him things like, oh, I can tell you where God is. God's in the mountains. God's in the sky. God's in the heavens. God's in the sea. God's in faraway countries. But this wasn't quite what he was looking for. And then one day, this man came to see the king. He was just a very simple but very wise man. Everybody knew him as just a quiet, very calm, and humble person. And he said, sir, I know where God is. And the wealthy king asked, oh, really? Please tell me, where is God? And this wise man said, okay, but first, I need you to bring me a bowl of milk. Well, this wealthy king didn't understand how that was going to help, but it seemed easy enough. And after the milk arrived, the wise man said, now, Your Majesty, I want you to put your hand in the bowl of milk. And so the king put his hand in the milk. And then the wise man asked him, what's in the milk? What do you see? The king replied, there's nothing in the milk. It's just a bowl of milk. So he asked him again, are you sure there is just milk in there? No, said the rich king, there's nothing in the milk. It's just a bowl of milk. I am sure. So the wise man said, okay, now I want you to stir the milk with your hand. So he stirred the milk, and he stirred it, and he stirred it, and he stirred, and he stirred, and he stirred for such a long time that he had to take a break. And after he had rested, he started to stir the milk again. He stirred it and stirred it, and in time, from the same bowl of milk, now there was cream. And then there was butter. These things came from the milk. Now the rich king looked at the wise man and he said, I don't understand. What's the point you're trying to make? I asked you to tell me where God is, and you just got a bowl of milk and made me stir it. Okay, yeah, okay, all right. I can see the cream that came out of this, and then it turned into butter. But what does this have to do with God? Where is God? And the wise man said, Sir, God isn't necessarily far away. God can be found inside you. And what we have to do sometimes is to churn ourselves. In other words, we need to churn our minds, our hearts, our feelings, our soul. We just got to chant or call on God's name. And that chanting is like churning. That calling out to God is like churning. It's like the churning of the milk. And slowly, within time, we'll see that God is inside of us. Just like the butter is inside the milk, God is inside of us. And after hearing this, the rich king fell to his knees and he bowed to the wise man. Well, I have to say that little did I realize after hearing this story for the very first time, just how important it is to understand that the presence of God or the divine can be seen in everyone, especially ourselves, in everyday life. I mean, on the surface, we might find this teaching difficult because, let's face it, whenever we look at ourselves or when we look at others, perhaps all we see is just so much physical pain or emotional wounds or psychological suffering or expressions of anger and violence or lust and jealousy and brokenness and so on and so on and so on. But can we also see the potential for God's presence to transform these wounds into a life-giving means of creating the healing we truly want to see in the world? Can we see the potential for the milk to be transformed into butter? Can we see the uncarved block of wood just by looking at, let's say, a wooden table or a chair? And, most importantly, can we see ourselves as souls once we get past all the externals? And yet, how many times do we struggle with seeing God in this world because we are unwilling to shift our focus? I mean, maybe, perhaps we are too busy to quiet ourselves, to listen for God's still small voice. Or, you know, let's take this one step further here. How many times do we wrongly assume that in order to see God first, we must first make God conform to our vision, our philosophy, our worldview, our prayers? That if God really wants a relationship with me, then it's going to have to be on my terms. And this is simply not the case. And when we take this understanding that we see ourselves as a soul, we see the potential to be able to recognize the soul, you know, in others, how then can we transform dimensions into like higher spiritual awareness? You know, do we see that kind of potential in ourselves? Do we see ourselves as more than just the body? Do we see ourselves as souls which are limitless and vast? You know, and to be quite honest, God's not akin to the genie in Aladdin's lamp. You know, we don't obtain these things simply by rubbing the spiritual lamp, hoping to get three wishes. So how do we see God more clearly in our lives? And how do we love God more dearly? And how do we follow with God more closely each and every day? Well, let me put this out there to you, okay? Perhaps, before we ask the question, how, maybe a better question would be for us to first understand from where inside the soul do these desires come? See, perhaps the desire to see and love and follow God more closely actually comes from a deep, deep place in us that words cannot express. a soul to soul language. See, as we heal from our psychological and emotional and physical and spiritual wounds, guarantee you, we're going to begin to look at ourselves and others differently. And this is a very good beginning. And yet, when we're able to see what we are truly made of, that is, soul, we begin to understand the true meaning of seeing the butter in the bowl of milk. Now, it may not be there at first glance, but as we develop our relationship with God or the divine, we heal from our woundedness. You know, I often share with people, you know, they often ask me, like, what do you pray for? You know, we always end up on topic of prayer. And I said, you know, my prayer life has really been on a journey of its own, because when I first started out, oh gosh, I wasn't even a teenager. I was still a kid. I would ask for things. Okay, God, give me this, give me that. You know, how about this? You know, and I knew God wasn't this, you know, God's not a Santa Claus, or, you know, God's not, put in a few coins in a one-armed bandit and pull the lever and hope to get something out of it. I knew that much, even as a kid. But I kept asking, you know, God, do this for me. Give me these things. And it wasn't until much, much later in my life that I started, as I saw myself as a soul, my prayer life changed, and that I no longer asked for God to give me things. Instead, I asked for God to remove things, remove everything in my life that hinders my walk, remove everything in my life that weighs me down, remove everything in my life that doesn't belong, and more importantly, remove everything in my life that clouds my vision of seeing myself as a soul and being able to see others as souls and walking that out in everyday life. See, when we're truly able to see ourselves as souls, and ultimately, when we are able to realize ourselves as souls, and we begin to see others as souls, we are no longer willing to accept relating to people as anything less than them also being souls. We're done focusing on the externals, because we recognize there is so much more that we do not see. Well, how many times have we heard and see people calling for an end to violence and crime and poverty? Interestingly, you know, humanity on down through history has always struggled with these issues. But and this is my opinion here, I believe, you know, as much as humanity has struggled with these issues, has never looked for the answers in the right places. I mean, all too often the focus has been on the externals that have often caused such division in humanity since the beginning of measured time. And it's in the externals, you know, what we see, what we hear, what we feel, what we taste, what we smell, that have produced the isms in the world today. Sexism, racism, ageism, classism, egoism, and so forth. But when we focus on the soul of the person, all of these isms fall away. They simply cannot follow the language of the soul, because the soul is always found by looking inward. There is no more sexism. I mean, what? Does the soul have a sex? Does the soul have a race? Does the soul have an age? Does the soul have an ego? I mean, these isms do not have a voice in matters of the soul. And yet, the truth is that the greatest strength of who we are as souls lies in our ability to transform and transcend the physical, emotional, and psychological limitations. For as much as history has shown us that these horrific crimes humanity does to itself, there are just as many stories out there of humanity rising above such tragedies to heal and reclaim their soul. So let's circle back here. You know, how do we, being here in the 21st century, live out the wisdom contained in the Tao of Pooh? Well, let's begin by asking ourselves some tough questions. Do we really want to be happy and find that everlasting joy and bliss in or every day in life? Or do we really want to be miserable? The answer to these questions really begins with being appreciative of who we are and what we have. As Lao Tzu wrote, a tree as big around as you can reach starts with a small seed, just as a 1,000-mile journey starts with one step. Wisdom, happiness, courage are not waiting somewhere out there beyond the sight at the end of a straight line. They're part of this continuous cycle that begins right here. They're not only the ending, but the beginning as well. And Benjamin Hoff writes that within each of us, we have to contend with the fact that we just might be an owl or a rabbit or an Eeyore or a Pooh. Perhaps far too long, we've chosen the way of owl and rabbit. You know, owl as one who is unteachable because he or she believes that, well, they've attained all the knowledge that they need for this life. And so they pontificate every chance they get. Or rabbit. Rabbit who's always running around worried that what he does, is just not enough. And that some disaster is just around the corner. Or are we like Eeyore? You know, always a gloomy Gus or a Debbie Downer as we complain about everything, especially the results of our efforts. But all of these characters accomplish nothing. Because if we're smart, we're going to choose the way of Pooh or Puh, calling us to live simplistically. Always teachable, inquisitive, like having a child's mind or having that childlike faith and amazement. If we don't, we're going to run the risk of never finding our way through the forest. So let's be open and allow the natural order of things to teach us not to fight against these things. Let's allow ourselves to learn from nature as one day follows another and one season flows into the next season. Rather, let's just go with the flow as the game of Pooh sticks. You know, in the Bible, there are many, many verses of letting go of intentions and expectations and outcomes and allowing God to take over. And the Tao is similar in this aspect, you know, making plans, but allowing them to unfold as they should, regardless of what people do. Well, let's also keep in mind that the Tao Te Ching are only philosophies. They're guidelines for ways to live your life. They don't compromise any religious belief, but they can add to our general thinking and our lifestyles. It's words of wisdom. So let's say you're reading the Tao Te Ching. Think about the ways to apply that text to everyday situations. It's kind of like reading Proverbs in the Christian Bible. And when you're feeling doubtful, anxious, or even overly ambitious, how do we apply this wisdom? How is this understanding of ourselves as souls and seeing one another as souls just extremely beneficial, extremely healing, extremely empowering? Life can get complicated quite easily. I don't have to tell you that. You know this. But sometimes all we need to do is get back to the basics. And when feeling overwhelmed, you know, these guidelines or this wisdom, you know, just present us with essential rules in how to manage, you know, our actions, our relationships and self-worth in a few concise sentences. So all in all, don't overcomplicate things. See yourself for who you are, a soul. And what remains for us is to realize that one of the best ways to live is to travel a path of gentleness, with its own proclamation, living out its own good news, living out its own wisdom as a soul, and seeing others as soul. I know many Christians who also follow Taoism, and they're often ones who show themselves in very humble actions, like faith itself. You know, they trust that Christianity is a way of living, that the winds of the Spirit blow in many directions, and that humans can be refreshed by these winds, that they live and move and have their being within the larger context of 10,000 things, each of which deserves respect. They trust that the good life lies in living simply and honestly, without pretense or the need to be noticed. They trust spontaneous actions, which are natural and devoid of self-consciousness and can be a form of spirituality in their own right, because I'm convinced that God likes to hide in the details. And that one key to understanding life is to imitate water, with its freedom to adapt to new circumstances and in very fresh ways. That blind ambition is a dead end, and gentleness of spirit is a high ideal. And that the people who are closest to the truth are those who don't speak about it at all, because they know the wisdom of silence. You have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I've been your host, Dr. James Houck. Thank you for spending this hour with me, and if you'd like to go back and listen to this broadcast again in about a day or so, just visit the website and pbsradio.com, /Reclaiming Authenticity. There, that'll get you to the website. And just go down till you see the archives, click on that, the drop-down box, and you can find the show that you would like to listen to again. And please, drop me a line. Let me know what you think. Let me know your thoughts on this. And if there's any way that, let's say, perhaps I could pray for you, or if there's something that you might have questions with, I'll see what I can do to help answer those questions the best I can. So in the meantime, until we are together again in 2 weeks, everybody out there be safe, be happy, behave yourselves, and by all means, begin seeing yourself as a soul.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on PBS Radio TV.